Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to our first group coaching call here at B2B Business Launcher 2.0 program. It's great to be here with you guys. I'm very excited to finally talk with you and go through your questions and give you feedback. So a couple of, a few housekeeping items before we get to live Q&A. So we're going to give you plenty of notice on these calls, and actually the full schedule is located inside the training portal. So when you first log in to the program, you'll see that there's a schedule there on that page. You may want to go ahead and add these calls to your calendar just so they're there. You don't schedule anything. You don't have any conflicts, and you get reminders. But we'll also send you reminders, at least a couple of reminders for each call. So be mindful of that. If you haven't been getting Crystal's reminders about calls and when we're releasing training sessions, make sure to email her support@b2blauncher.com, and she'll troubleshoot it for you. We just want to make sure you're getting all our communications. So just a heads up, you're going to be getting those over the next 4 months. The other thing is when you join these calls, everyone will be on mute. That's the only way we can keep background noise really down. We've tried it even with three or four people, and it just doesn't work from people typing and so forth. So everyone is on mute, so when you come in, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to put yourself on mute. In fact, if you do that, that doesn't seem to work because if you do get on the call, then you'll forget or many times forget that you're on mute. So there's nothing you need to do. I just want to make sure you knew that. So that leads to the next item, which is, well, how do I – ask a question, or how do I contribute to the conversation? Star two on your telephone keypad will raise your hand. I have a dashboard here in front of me on my screen. I will see that your hand is raised. Most of the time I don't have a name. Many times I just have a city or an area or a phone number, so I'll read whatever I have, and you can ask away. So I'll bring you on, we can have a conversation. There's an option to listen to the call through your computer speakers only. Just, you know, if you choose that option, it's not my favorite option just because it's difficult to have a conversation, right? If the only way you can ask a question is by typing it in. There's about a 20-second delay. I'll read it and then respond, but many times I have follow-up questions. So it's just it's hard to really have some dialogue that way. So I encourage everyone to dial in through a phone, or even there's a web call option available. There should be a web call option available that that pretty much allows you to have a conversation even through your computer. So just know that that's there. We'll go in order of questions that were asked, and the system keeps a queue. So at any time, you can just dial star two on your telephone keypad. There'll be a queue, and I'll just unmute folks one at a time in the order in which they raise their hands. One thing you'll notice over the next few calls is I don't want to give you guys, and I'm not the type of guy who will give you quick answers. So I like to give you feedback. I like to make sure that your question is answered. I'll take as much time as I can with everyone, but at the same time, excuse me, just be mindful that I want to make sure I get to everyone. So I'll definitely spend some time with you. I'm not just going to give you a yes or no answer. But, we'll after a certain point, just, make sure to give somebody else a shot to ask a question. You can always come back. All right. So, one last thing. So these calls are always be recorded. In fact, we're recording right now. And we will post the replay within 24 hours. So you'll get an email letting you know, hey, the recording is posted. Here's where you can find it. So if you ever miss a call or you have to leave early, just know that it's always there. One thing I do when I'm on your side is if I have to leave early, I'll just jot down when I left, let's say 47 minutes past the hour. That way when I go back to the replay, I can just catch it from that point. Don't have to do it from the beginning. All right, so with that, we have an open floor right now, star two will raise your hand, and while I'm waiting for questions, I just went to the forum. I haven't been on the forum today, and Jessica had asked something here about research. So let me go ahead and address that, and this will be a good way to open up the discussion. So let me read what she says, and I'll just paraphrase, summarize it a little bit. It says, in preparing for this conference call, I would like to ask a few questions. Is there a reputable website or organization of freelance writers where I can glean knowledge about existing markets? Every professional site that I find online seems to be advancing their own directive. I have experience in the medical marketing world. Obviously, there can be a profitable niche in that area as the need for content is constant. Oh, let me just stop right there. So in terms of formal organizations, you know, reputable organizations of freelance writers where you can do some research on markets, unfortunately, I don't know of any. There might be some that focus on one particular market. I'm not aware of any of those, but I would think that there might be a couple out there. But they're not going to be big because I haven't heard of them. And fortunately, there isn't a place where you can do that kind of research. It just the nature of the business. You know, this is kind of one of these niche, I wouldn't say underground businesses, but this is not like, you know, something big like healthcare, for instance, where you can find all kinds of information. Kind of the freelance writing, freelance copywriting market, it's kind of an underground, if you will, type of business. And it's not, even though it's huge, there are no associations that post that kind of information out there. I've put some surveys together and written some reports based on the data that I've gathered, but there are very few of us doing that, and especially on a regular basis. So this is why, in terms of, well, I got all these markets that I'm interested in, you know, how do I know which one might be the best fit? And this is why it's so important to just go through that process from session one, because if you notice, I have you start with an inventory of where you have a background experience, where you have an interest, passions, talents, skills, etc. Because you really should start with just the things that you already know, right? Because if you already know it, then you'll know, there's a good chance that you'll know who to ask, you know, in terms of the potential, or you already know or have a decent idea of what the potential might be. So my approach is very different from the way that many other people teach it, which is, you know, look at markets that are hot and then start investigating each. And I think that's a really backwards way of doing it. I've never seen that work really well, and when it does work, it's really by luck. I always say, look, start with where you are right now, what you have, what you know. Start there and then investigate all those possibilities one by one. All right, so let me continue with Jessica's question. Says, obviously, there can be a profitable niche in that area as the need for content is constant, meaning the medical world. However, I also have tons of contacts and experience in the world of fundraising and nonprofits. I would love to save the world in my job and be a grant writer. I can't identify if this is an area that's open to freelancing or typically done in-house. There seems to be a mix of jobs online, freelance, full-time, employee, and volunteer. Anyone have any experience? So, yes, fundraising, nonprofits, absolutely. There are a lot of freelance copywriters who work in those markets. And most of the need and the ones who make a decent living do direct response copy. So these are the ones, these are the writers writing the campaign letters, the appeal letters, really, because that's what's desperately needed, right? That's where you can really measure your results. So a lot of people say, well, nonprofits, they don't really have a budget. Well, they do, but where they're really going to put their money is in things that are going to bring in money. So just know that that's going to be the biggest opportunity as a freelancer in nonprofits. And then she says, is it okay to have a dual niche, such as medical B2B or B2C writer and then nonprofit grant writer? Yes, I know that would be marketing to completely different groups. I just hate narrowing it down. I get it, Jessica, and you're not alone there. A lot of people, myself included, I really have a hard time narrowing things down, and it just seems unfair. And it's counterintuitive, isn't it, that you really need to narrow things down. You think, well, why would I do that? I have these two areas that I'd be really, really good at. And sure, they're not related, but I don't want to miss out. You know, that's really what it boils down to, doesn't it? But here's the counterintuitive part. By not narrowing it down, you're actually diluting your message. When the two markets are just that far apart, the problem is it's really difficult for someone to really see the connection, and it's just going to feel, and sometimes subconsciously, like you're just not going to be the best fit. Because somebody who says, look, all I do is health B2B healthcare writing, as opposed to, well, I do B2C or B2B healthcare writing, and I also do nonprofits, and I also write grants. Unless you already have a good reputation in each of those areas, and by the way, that's the only exception, you know, when you've already established yourself, usually serendipitously these things have happened where you've just developed a good following in each of those. Unless that's happened, you're really working against the current if you try to diversify that way. Again, I know it's counterintuitive, but I just rarely see it work. You're better off picking one, you know, just really, really focusing on that and getting as much success as you can, getting momentum there. And then once you're more established, then you can make that decision as to whether or not to develop yet a second practice or a second focus. That's really the time that you can make a good decision. So, Jessica, I hope that helps. And, of course, you know, I think you're on the call, so if you want to discuss it further, I'm happy to do that. So, again, guys, star two on your telephone keypad. We'll raise your hand. I'll bring you in. I promise I don't bite. And we have a caller already. And let's see. This is a number out of Columbia, South Carolina. You're on. Hello.
Hello. Hey. This is Tracy. How are you?
Hi, Tracy. Good. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too. I'm actually, I have a Columbia number, but I'm in North Carolina.
See, that, that's why I don't, I try to be as vague as possible.
Got it. So my question is, I'm kind of coming to the conclusion that I'm really not good at content such as blogs and articles.
Uh-huh.
Do you think, is that going to hold me back?
No, not necessarily. What are you good at?
I'm good at I don't know exactly. Emails.
Okay.
Emails and letters and things that are a little more straightforward.
Okay. Emails, letters, usually to generate a lead, for instance.
I don't know for sure because I don't have any clients. You know, I haven't gotten paid. I have no paid work. So.
No, that's fine, and you're in good company because, I mean, most people here are just starting out.
Yeah.
But, okay, so what? Tell me what you like writing then.
So what I feel like I'm good at is explaining things, explaining products and how they work and how they're going to benefit someone. But, of course, without all of the emotional – stuff like you would do in B2C.
Okay.
But when it comes to like writing a blog post, I just usually just can't figure out where I need to go.
Okay.
Does that make
sense?
So
there are a lot of opportunities writing what's called marketing collateral. So brochures, mm-hmm. sales sheets, and even website copy that explain a company's products or services.
Okay.
Very straightforward.
Yeah, that's the kind of
stuff
though.
Yeah. Yeah. Now the emotional aspect there, or emotional element, is not going to be, hey, you know, you're going to make $1 million tomorrow. It's the
right.
It's kind of a subtle, hey, this is how you're going to win, Mrs. Prospect, in your job. This is how you're going to look good. You know, if
right.
you buy this or sign up for this.
Right, right. It seems like as I have been poking around trying to find jobs on like Upwork and certain websites, it seems like it's everybody just wants content writers.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
well, that
why
is
I'm
content, by the way. That
little,
is content.
A little, I guess web pages, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's so keep in mind that content isn't necessarily something that's unrelated to the product. many times content refers to information about the product or about the challenges that the product solves. Those are fun to write, and but they're not necessarily in the form of a blog post. You know, it could be a report or a white paper, for instance. You know, these are very straightforward, business-like. In the case of a white paper, you're building a business case for something.
Okay. Right. Okay. So I don't have to worry.
I wouldn't worry. I mean, so this is what, there's a method to the madness, right? I wouldn't worry too much about that right now. I mean, obviously the biggest thing, if you're here, you want to write, right? And you want to write for clients and you want to get paid for it. It's important that you not worry too much about, you can leave the what you write part of your positioning kind of broad right now.
Okay.
You know, you could say marketing collateral, for instance, or marketing pieces. You could leave it really broad.
Okay.
And then just focus on the other elements, you know, the for whom and what makes you different.
Right. Okay. All right.
And then, but I will tell you this, Tracy, I would still be a little bit open-minded as you go along, because what will happen, and I would say this happens 90% of the time, is you start getting some opportunities. They're not always what you expected. So in other words, they're not, they're, let's say you really want to write white papers. Many times what you'll get is something to the effect of, Tracy, that's great. I actually don't need a white paper right now. What I need help with is writing, you know, I got this executive team and we all need new biographies for a website. Could you do that?
Uh-huh.
And you need to, especially the first year, you need to be kind of a yes person. You know,
Absolutely.
Say yes to
it. Yeah,
as
I need work. I need work. I'll do anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So look at it that way, and that's how you – two things. First of all, you'll start generating some cash, which is important. Two, it might lead you down a path that you didn't even know existed. That's a good path. And third, it just – it in terms of getting that experience and getting comfortable, that's really important. It's really important you start working with clients as soon as possible so that you can, you know, get that momentum.
Yeah, okay.
Make sense?
Okay. Yep. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. All right, so good. We got some – I got seven of you with hands raised. Just know that I'm not ignoring you. I'm just going to go through one by one. And I think this is Jessica out in Savannah. Hey, Jessica, is that you?
Hey, yes, it is. Thank you so much for answering my question.
You bet. Does that make sense?
It made perfect sense. And, you know, I've been just thinking kind of off and on all through the weeks after the assignment, trying to hone in on what would be a good idea for me. But I'm coming from the world of, at least sort of the world of magazine writing, where, you know, I've learned to form a query and approach an editor and see if I can get some momentum, you know, and I've had a couple of pieces published. But what do you, just kind of circling back to that question, who do you approach for campaign appeals and appeals letters and content such as that? Is that like a lobbyist or a fundraising director, or, I mean, that's not your typical, at least to me, you know, I feel like with a grant, with some kind of certification in grant writing, I can have like a hook to say, hey, you need money, I can probably obtain it. But I know that, you know, I can't really decide if they're doing that in-house or not, but who do I approach to get that kind of work?
Yeah, so it's it's usually going to be a marketing director or a fundraising director, somebody along those lines, and there's going to be different titles. But I'm not extremely familiar with the world of fundraising, but it's going to be an obvious title, you know. And we're going to get to prospecting in session four. We're going to go deep into it, but you really want to start with
I'm already racing ahead.
No, and that's fine. Okay. I mean, I get it. You really want to start with your network and see who knows who. And LinkedIn is great for that, by the way, because you'll be able to get a couple of introductions, hopefully. That's going to be your best bet. But, yeah, there are people in these organizations, that's their job. You know, it's basically to create and deploy these marketing campaigns.
Okay. That's a great idea. Thank you so much for sharing that. I just hadn't thought about the other content that they might need, you know, beyond grants.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of direct response, you know, packages that that's really where the biggest need is going to be in terms of recurring.
It's funny, you know, my email list on my personal email list is inundated with this, so I should have recognized it. But thank you very much.
You bet. I'm doing a quick search here on LinkedIn, and I didn't do an advanced search. An advanced search will let me search by title. I just did in the general search box, fundraising director, and some people. So campaign director is another one that came up.
Okay.
Fundraising manager, marketing director / fundraiser, socials and fundraiser director, director of fundraiser marketplace. And you'll see, I mean, you know, but it's it, if you you start with your network, and then you look to see, you can do the search fundraising or marketing director.
I can think of two people that hold that title in my LinkedIn network, so that's wonderful. Thank you.
Perfect. Yeah, and just know we're going to get deeper into that for sure. I'm not going to leave you hanging. Don't worry.
Okay. No, this is refining things, so it's wonderful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right. So we have next, I think this is Robin, and it's a Burbank, California number. You're on. Hello.
Hi, Ed. How are you?
Doing
so
well. Is this Robin?
It is, yes. Sorry, I should have confirmed that.
Good to finally talk to you.
Same here. Thank you so much. So I'm not really sure how to ask this question. So I went through the positioning exercise, and I confess I had a little bit of resistance because, sorry, I'm losing my voice. I knew off the bat what I wanted to specialize in, and that is defined contribution plan marketing, which is like 401ks and retirement plans and that kind of thing. I've been in financial services for 20 years, and I've been doing defined contribution marketing for about 15. So it's an area I know well, and I have a lot of contact in it. But I was talking to somebody who is a consultant in the industry a couple of weeks ago, and I said, "Do you think I can make money writing content in this industry?" And he said, "No." And I said, "Okay." And I beg to differ because that's what I've done professionally for 15 years.
And by the way, in your industry, have you what function do you serve? Are you in marketing? You write content.
I am in marketing. Yes, I do write content, and a lot of it. I mean, all different kinds of content, from, you know, web content to email marketing to white papers, thought leadership, all kinds of things. So there's a lot of content being generated.
Yeah. So you're intimately familiar with exactly the pieces that are being written.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I think a big advantage that I have, too, is that I know the language. I mean, defined contribution has a very specific lingo that goes along with it, and it's highly regulated. So I think it's a good niche. So I guess my question, though, is all that said, is, you know, with all this experience in financial services, and I mean, that's really what I know the best and what I feel most comfortable writing about. I mean, I could probably write about investments, or I actually have a little gig right now where I'm redoing the web content for a rare coin management company. They help wealthy people invest in rare coins. And I'm finding that I'm able to kind of navigate that as well. But I'm wondering if I should brand myself more broadly as more of a financial services expert, specialist, writer, or if I can drill down into this niche the way that I really would like to.
Yeah, so I'm curious why your contact said that he didn't think he could make money in it.
I don't really know. He didn't give me a good answer. He just, I think that he's a content person, and I don't think he's had a lot of success with it. I mean, he's more of a consultant, so he'll actually consult with plans and kind of give them guidance more on like their what's called their design, so how they actually implement the plan. But he's written some content sort of from an expert point of view, and I don't think he gets a lot of distribution on it, but I just think he doesn't know how to do it. That's just pure speculation and personal opinion. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. So I feel very confident that you should keep it narrow the way you have. And
okay.
You're in a unique situation. So this is a great question because it points to all the factors that really create a perfect storm. You've been in the business for a long time. You happen to be in a marketing function even better. Gosh, you know, there are a lot of people who are not in a marketing function right now, in financial services, for instance. But that's fine. I mean, that's enough. But you have one step further, marketing function, and even one step further, which is you actually write marketing content. So you're intimately familiar with the nature of the demand, the nature of the pieces that need to be written, the lingo, everything. So, I mean, to me, this is like a trifecta. I'm assuming after 20 years that you have some contacts in the industry.
Yeah.
To me, I mean, you would have to make a really strong case for not starting here. I suspect that based on what you're sharing with me, he's got a very narrow view of what the demand would be. He's at a higher level, and consultants, you know, they're not tactical people. Many times, you know, the kind of bigger picture people, and they're not intimately familiar with a lot of these pieces are very tactical in terms of the creation of them. And I suspect that he just may not see it. The other thing that you need to understand is you don't need 17 clients, you know, each keeping you really, really busy. That's way more than you can handle. I mean, if you just had three or four clients and three of them were fairly steady and one kind of came and went, there's many different permutations, but that could keep you so, so busy, you know? And the question really becomes, do you think that in defined contributions in that market, you could have three, four clients at any given time?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So I think you're fine. I mean, listen, if you start having second thoughts, call me.
Okay.
Get back to me, seriously, because I it's pretty rare for someone to be in your shoes when they're looking to make that transition to full-time freelancing, and I think it makes too much sense.
Great. Well, that's good to hear. Thank you.
Absolutely. You're welcome, Robin. Yeah, this is great because, you know, I hate sometimes I have to give people answers such as, you know, well, it depends. Now, I won't just give you an it depends answer. I'll ask you some follow-up questions so we can dig deeper and maybe make an educated decision. This is a, I think, very clear-cut situation. But, again, Robin, I mean, I totally respect that, you know, it got you thinking. And that's good. I mean, you should question it. You want to make sure you look at every possibility. You want to make sure you do talk to some people. But at the end of the day, make sure you make an educated decision, not one based on just one comment or one thing you read or saw, because it is an important decision. All right. So, now, this next caller, let's see, it's a 316 area code, it looks like. It might be from outside of North America, but you're on.
I think it's me.
Yeah. Who's this?
Yeah. This is Saida from the Netherlands.
Hey, how are you?
Hi. I'm fine. How are you?
Doing well. What time is it over there?
It's 7 in the evening.
Okay.
7:30 right now.
7:30, okay.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Yes.
Yeah, so my question is, does it matter that I have no contacts that work at the marketing department of my prospective niche?
It does not matter, no. In fact, that's the most common scenario I see is, for instance, well, I worked in construction for 12 years. Let's see, construction supplies. I worked for manufacturing companies. So I know a lot of the different people, but I don't know anyone in marketing. That's fine.
Yeah.
The most important factor in a situation like that is that you know the business or you understand the business more than anything. I think yours was banking, right?
Yeah. I've worked seven years in banking. Yeah.
Yeah, so don't worry about that. The biggest thing is going to be, I mean, if you have the contacts, you know, like Robin, again, she's in a perfect situation. Those are rare. Then use it. But if you don't have it, that's not the most important thing.
Okay. Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah. Good. And was my answer helpful in the forum regarding, you know, the whether to pursue BPO or banking or how to look at that?
Yeah, it was. I'm still a bit nervous to go into banking since I really did not enjoy working in banking. So, yeah, it's a bit hard now to go back to that world.
Yeah.
But, I've got to go where my best opportunity is, I think.
Yeah. You know, so look at it this way. You know, that was one of the factors to consider in the exercise, right? The topic and the people in the industry, whether you would enjoy it. I think it's an important factor, but at the same time, it shouldn't necessarily weigh the heaviest in your decision. If everything else really points to, let's say, banking, but it's not your favorite, one way you could look at it is, all right, let's get you some clients, let's get you going, and then after a year or two, you will know enough to, and you will have enough of a reputation that you can start transitioning into something a little different, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the answers will be clear at that point in terms of what you could transition to. But it's just hard to do from scratch. You want – so in other words, it's like you're at a crossroads and the path in front of you seems to be less crowded. But then the other paths have, let's say, some obstacles in the way. And you know that once you get past this area that all the paths are kind of come close together. Or at least connect, then go on the path with least resistance. And once you're there, then it's easier to transition from one to the other than it is to try to go, you know, make it past those obstacles. That can be really challenging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm also thinking I need to investigate what kind of content banking would need.
Yeah. Definitely, you know, look into that. I wouldn't spend a ton of time because, again, you can keep it kind of broad. Let's just say marketing content and then just see. Just start – when we start prospecting, you'll see you can keep it kind of broad and then see who raises their hand in a way and says, yeah, I actually need some help with that. Here's what we need. Can you help us?
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks.
All right. Next we have, let's see, I think this is Carissa in Michigan. You're on. Hello. Or at least it's an Ann Arbor, Michigan number, 734 area code.
Yeah, it's me. Can you hear me now?
Hey. How are you? Is it Carissa?
I had you on. Yeah, it is.
Great.
Sorry about that. I had you on my headphones, and apparently the microphone decided to stop working.
No worries. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. I am very happy to be here. Quick question. So when you're talking about refining your niche and narrowing down, what about when you're, like, for me, my background is retail, manufacturing. I'm in marketing in all of those. I've done marketing in all of them. But then I've also done some published pieces, and the published pieces are they have nothing to do with any of that. They're in health and wellness, which is like something that I'm very interested in writing for, and that's where I've actually found some clients. So back to what you said right at the beginning about do what you know. So I know retail and I know manufacturing, but my published pieces are in health and wellness. So what do you think there?
I think the your work experience will count a little bit more, will weigh a little more heavily than your writing experience. So I would look at retail and manufacturing first and more heavily.
Okay.
Because I assume that's where you may also have some contacts, even if they're not necessarily in marketing. But you know the business as well, as opposed to health and wellness. You've written about it, and maybe it's a personal passion. So it still counts. You should put it on your list. But that one, again, using the obstacles metaphor, it will be a little bit harder to get through initially.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
All right. Yeah, it does. All right. And I've kind of been leaning towards the retail side as far as the focus, but that health and wellness is just so attractive.
Yeah, and you know, there again, it's this could be an opportunity down the road. You know, it's gosh, where have I seen that? We've all been there, right? I think it's just when we try to start something new, we lock up a little bit. But I always go back to this analogy of, you know, you spend 4 years in college and, you know, you get this degree, but really at the end of the day, unless it was a very precise technical degree, let's say pre-med or pre-law or accounting, right, or engineering, the chances of you getting a job in that precise field are no longer what they used to be. And I know I remember my dad saying, because I was really freaked out, I graduated in a down economy, and he said, Ed, you just take the first job. That whoever offers you the first job, take it. Because the whole point was to get on a path, period. Right? So if somebody was willing to work with what they saw in me, just take that path. Once you're on that path, the other paths kind of appear in front of you, you know? And he was right. I mean, the one thing I said I would never do was get a job in sales. And that's the only thing I could find. And guess what? That's where I ended up. And, you know, it took me to where I am today in kind of a really indirect way. But so I would say, you know, just get on the path, and then the health and wellness thing, I doesn't mean that you have to shut it down for good. You will find a way to make that work somehow.
Okay. That sounds good.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great question, and you're not alone. Believe me, there's others here who are thinking the same thing. So, you guys, just keep in mind, you know, this decision is not final. This decision is really for the next few months. It's your starter, right? Just like with me, I said, well, I got student loans coming due in a couple of months. I keep striking out. I need a job. Sure, you know, this plumbing supply company hired me, and it was a management training program, but it was all leading to sales. And then the management. Two things that I had no interest in doing. I had a finance degree. So I just got on the path. You know, it gave me a paycheck. I got excellent training. And it was, I wouldn't be here had it not been for that opportunity, which at the time really sucked. Or at least I thought so. So you will pivot. You will pivot several times. Everyone here will, believe me. I shouldn't say everyone. Most of you will end up pivoting, whether it's your first year, second year, third year. It will happen. All right. I think next year we have Bill out of New York. Bill, is that you?
That's me. How are you doing, Ed?
Doing well. Good to finally connect.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you. I just have a two-part question. First, my background is in small manufacturing, and in going through the process, of the positioning exercise. I see my niche kind of being in writing kind of business plans, bank proposals, strategic plans for small manufacturing companies. At least that's the initial. I do that currently. I'm in financial analysis, and it seems to me to be the kind of optimal transition into a freelance writing position. My question is, in thinking through this, this is the type of writing where you have to extract a lot of information and a lot of thoughts from, let's say, executives of the company in order to put an effective business plan together for them.
Mm-hmm.
So in thinking through this, I see that this could be part of a service business and part writing business. In other words, in order to do an effective business plan, you have to kind of interview the people who would be involved in the decision-making. And then once that is done, then the writing begins, the planning, you know, putting together the white papers, the strategic plans, those type of things. Have you seen in your experience where that kind of dual enterprise works, or if it doesn't work?
It's a good question. I can't think of anyone who's positioned themselves that way where they offer both and one leads to the other. However, mm-hmm. So follow-up question, so if it would be business plans,
right,
what would be is there always a natural progression from a business plan to marketing content? Because I would think that a lot of companies want the plan, but they're not necessarily thinking about marketing yet. They just, their main focus right now is the plan, for instance.
Yeah, I would see it as there probably isn't much unless they wanted to keep all the writing, let's say, under one umbrella or one person. But I would see the business plan as being more of a plan that would lead them, let's say, to more revenue growth, more profit, you know, in both the short and long term, and to be a document they could use to run their business,
mm-hmm.
you know, like kind of a standard by which they can judge their business and make decisions along the way. There would be, on the one hand, a writing component that we would prepare the actual plan for them. And also another part of that is more like the financial analysis piece. So the two are actually together. I remember hearing a podcast once where someone you had interviewed had done something similar, but I think she had actually farmed out the financial analysis piece. And my question is, I could actually do both, so I could keep it all together. Do you see this as something that could work, or is it better just to kind of focus on the writing? Because one would be almost like a management service, and then that would lead to preparation of a business plan or strategic plan.
So if I'm looking at this, let me see if I have this right. So the business plan, there would be the kind of the interview information extraction component.
Yes.
Then there's writing the plan, or maybe mm-hmm. not in this order, and then there's the analysis, right? So maybe
the
it's the analysis second and then the plan.
Correct.
Okay. So you can definitely create a practice just based on those three components.
Okay.
Now, you don't necessarily, like, you could just make a living from that and not necessarily have to write, for instance, a white paper or some articles
right.
or a case study or web copy. To me, that's mm-hmm. kind of that's a separate entity. That's a separate facet of,
mm-hmm.
of the business that could flow from this. But, I mean, I would be, in terms of making the decision, and I don't know if this is the question, your next question, mm-hmm. which is, which one should I maybe think about, which
mm-hmm.
whether it's business plans or marketing writing,
mm-hmm.
I would consider, just like with the positioning exercise, what do I know best? Where do I have contacts? Mm-hmm. And where do I have the most kind of insider intelligence? You know? Because if it's on the business plans, then I think that might be the first thing I would get into. Because, again, you're looking for the fastest possible wins, initial wins. And if you think you could get, let's say, a business plan gig, a couple of those, fairly easily, then as opposed to, let's say, some white paper work for a manufacturing company, then I would go with the business plans. I would start there and then just treat the content writing, the copywriting, as more of a, hey, you know, we talked about this as being an area of weakness or of opportunity. You know, I can help you with that.
Yeah, the second part of my question, I appreciate that answer. Thank you. The second part of my question is, I wanted to know your idea about possibly setting up a blog that would essentially either lead to the business website or be kind of I'm trying to think of the word. Would be almost like setting up a blog that I would write to essentially add expertise for. You know, for the business that I'm for the freelance business I'm looking to start. In other words, if I were to do a blog about small manufacturing and trends in small manufacturing, do you see that as adding value to the overall freelance writing business itself?
Yes. However, you got to make sure that it's useful to the audience, right? So, you know, are you going to keep it high level or are you going to do a combination of high level, you know, kind of the trends topics and more practical advice? You know, so you need to have a pretty good idea of what your audience is really interested in. And I don't know, you would know better than I would, but I would guess that both would be helpful, but the one that they would be more attracted to might be the practical, you know, kind of great, Bill. I get it. I'm in it all the time. I understand. I'm glad you understand what my world is like. I got so many plates in there. Like, what do I do? You know, can you give me some simple to-dos or things that I need to think about, you know?
I appreciate it.
You know
that.
Who's
Thank
got
you
a great website? I don't know if I sent you this, Bill, but Diana Huff. Are you familiar with her?
No, I'm not. Diana Huff.
Yeah, so check out huffindustrialmarketing.com, H-U-F-F, okay. Huff Industrial Marketing. So Diana, she's a good friend, and she's out of New Hampshire. Her target market is small manufacturing firms, specifically like family-owned manufacturing businesses. And she has created a whole business around that. And if you look around, you'll see, and she's got a blog. So you'll see, you know, I think that's a reflection of what the conversations that are going on in her audience's head. Right? Number one. Number two, you'll get a really good idea for, okay, if I'm going to focus, let's say, more on the marketing piece, not on the business plan side, what's working in terms of services for somebody who's targeting the same market?
Right.
You know, so we'll give you a really good idea, and I'll just narrow it down. Really what her big thing is marketing consulting, specifically generating leads through the site, website, copy websites that actually impress the right kind of visitors.
I'm on her site now. She's obviously her background is marketing, mine is finance. So, but no, this is a good, a good contact, and I'll look through here, and you know, it looks, you know, it's a very impressive site. So I know she has a blog on here too, which I'll read through.
Yeah. So now, you know, there's many different ways you could slice and dice it. You could, you know, maybe your angle could be, you could still target that industry, but your angle, and this is the why you're different, is your financial background.
Right.
It's you bring that kind of thinking and analysis. That's if you wanted to do the marketing. You know,
right.
Of course, you should definitely do that for the business plan side if you want to do that.
Right. Okay. Great. I appreciate the answer. Thanks very much, Ed.
Yeah. Was it helpful? I'm not sure if
yes.
I gave you what you were looking for.
No, it was very helpful. It gave me a lot to think about, because I'm like everyone else. I'm in the process of just, you know, putting all the initial thoughts together. So it definitely helped me focus on it. I appreciate that. Thanks, Ed.
Good. Absolutely. You know, when in doubt, Bill, and this is for everybody else, focus. Keep it focused. By focus, I'm not saying keep it extremely specific and narrow, okay? But I mean, like, this is a perfect situation in terms of, well, and a couple of you have already brought this up, I got retail and manufacturing experience, but I also like health and wellness. Focus. Pick one to start with, and pick your highest probability one. So in this case, I can do a great job with business plans, but I know I could also write some pretty amazing marketing pieces. You know, I would really urge you to start with one. And then the other thing could be maybe as an aside, hey, by the way, if you need help here, I can also help you. But it shouldn't even be on the homepage necessarily. It's like you really want to direct the attention to, you know, one audience or one type of service. All right. Great questions, guys. All right. Let's see. Moving on to all right. So this is – I don't have a name, but this is a number out of Cliffside, New Jersey, 201 area code. You're on. Hello, 201 area code, last four digits, 2803. Hello. All right, I can hear you, but it sounds like I may be on speaker. I'm not sure. I will. All right, I'll put you back on mute. If I miss anyone, it should raise your hand again, star two. All right, so next we have, I believe this is Susan, not a Michigan number. Susan,
yes.
Is that you?
It is.
Hello, welcome.
Thank you. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very excited to be here. I started a business in freelance in 2008 and ended up getting a real job, and then had to stop that, and now I'm interested in going back to this with a little bit more focus. And I've had 4+ years in a nonprofit where I currently am in economic development, and we exist because of fundraising. So I'm very interested in using that as my niche. I could be jumping ahead, but that portfolio bonus piece that you provided earlier this week,
yeah,
was tremendous. And I'm going to ask a question, and my moral compass is always on the straight and narrow, but listening to that audio cast, I noticed that one of the reasons that you can use those, if you had to write for fictitious companies or whatever for sample work. And my question is, some of my best, obviously, non-for-profit work has been in what I'm currently doing now. And I have not shared my vision for what I'd like to do in the next year with my employer. What would you think about incorporating some of those pieces without being real evident in a portfolio piece like that?
So meaning because you wouldn't necessarily want to use their name?
Probably not, but And I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't want to use them as samples either on a website.
Okay. So what are you thinking in terms of using the portfolio one sheet, but maybe kind of only doing one or two, just so that it wouldn't be.
Yeah. Right. I mean, is that, and I don't, you know, I certainly am, I am ethical, I promise. I just was wondering if that was a good workaround for showing, because it's really a case study of what you've done.
Yeah.
And I've got a ton of those for the work I do now, and I just didn't know if that was appropriate.
You know, the whether it's appropriate or not, it's really, there's no rule for that. I think you would be the best judge of that. I think it's a really good question.
Okay.
I had a similar situation. If you know my story, I was moonlighting for almost 3 years.
Right.
And the pieces that I did have that I was most proud of were from my – I wrote for my employer.
Mm-hmm.
And the rule I basically used was this. First of all, I was fine using it, but I didn't want to go out of my way to have my employer find out what I was doing.
Correct.
So
correct.
I used one or two of them that I definitely wrote and was already published. So it wasn't something content that was behind a gate. You know, it was published. It was out there.
Okay.
And
okay.
I used those, but I would only send those out to a prospect via email. So it wasn't posted on my site.
Yes. Okay. That's exactly what I'm thinking. And also the other piece to that, I loved how, I can't remember the guy. Was it Steve that was the?
Yeah, Steve. Uh-huh.
Yeah. How he, it was also available through your website, his website, but they had to request it.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So that would be another way to state it on your site. You know, we'll get to websites, but just one thing you should know, you don't need a lot of samples on your website.
Correct.
In fact, I think 3 or 4 is fine.
Okay.
And people always ask me, well, what if I have nothing? And we'll talk more about that, but you don't really need that much, even if a couple of them are fictitious. What you do is you use what you have. And then as you get clients, you start replacing those with more impressive ones.
Right. Okay. Well, I think that portfolio one sheet is brilliant. I mean, and it just – I think it rises above all the competition.
Yeah. Yeah, you know who did it? I had someone in the last group of this program do a really good job with that. She felt the same way. She's like, oh, my God, this solves my problem. And she wrote – I want to say she created like 6 of them.
Okay.
And I need to see if she ended up posting them. I think she did on her site. If she did, what I'll do, Susan, is I'll ask for her permission to just post a link to her website in the forum.
Okay. That would be awesome.
Yeah, so you can see how she did it, because she didn't even do the you know how Steve and his examples had like the screenshots,
right?
In images, she didn't even do that.
Yep.
Just hers is really a case study for each.
Okay. Well, that would be even better because it's very helpful, Ed, that you just and I just had an aha moment about something that's already been published.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, glad you liked that idea. I thought the same thing when Steve first told me about it. I said, oh, man, that's brilliant. You know, clients don't I know as writers we think, oh, we need a lot of samples, and clients want to be able to read everything. When you think about, and we've all been here, right, when you're really, really busy, you probably don't want to just read every single detail of something if you have to make a decision, right? So many clients are just so busy, they just want to kind of go through your website really quickly, and they're going to trust their gut. And believe me, that gut feeling is going to rise to the surface in like 10, 20 seconds tops. So this idea that, oh, well, I got to have these, you know, really heavy samples and a lot of diversity in my samples and then categorize them all. That's not really that important. So, which is good. because when you're starting out, you're not going to have a lot of that variety. But when, to your point, Susan, and for anybody else who's in that situation, one thing you don't want to do is have every sample be of the same client. So you want to make it look like there is some diversity there. So even if the other ones that you have are not as impressive, resist the temptation to post four from the same client and that's it. I'd rather have you pick one from that client or that employer and then the other three from other clients or employers. All right, moving along. I got a caller here from, this is Madison, Wisconsin, 608 area code. You're
that's
on.
That's me. All right.
Hello,
hi there. This is Leslie Blaze. Hi there.
Hey, how are you, Leslie?
Good.
Good to talk to you. So what can I, how can I help you? Leslie, hello.
Hello?
Hello, all right, you're back.
Yeah, I'm back, okay. All right, so my question is about the niches. So I was worked for a professional services firm, engineers, architects, planners for 24 years, and now I'm launching this freelance writing business. And so mostly I worked for, we had, you know, a lot of engineers, architects, but I haven't done anything for construction work. And, you know, they always say the AEC firm that includes construction, but does it matter, you know, that I really, and that's kind of how I'm marketing myself as AEC, but I really haven't done anything for construction. And then it also omits urban planning, and I worked quite a lot with planners, you know, on their kinds of projects. So mm-hmm. I just, you know, don't know about my focus if I can just say AEC because that's how people in the industry tend to know it. Or, you know,
yeah,
like it
great question. I would not worry about it. I would say construction as well. You know what? I'll give you an analogy. If you've ever traveled outside of the country, and like you know, we went to Italy a few years ago, for instance, and after a few days, we finally heard some English at a restaurant. We could tell they were Americans, right? So, like we approached them. Does it matter? I'm from Georgia. Does it matter that they are from Georgia? No. I mean, they were from California, I think, right? So it's when somebody finds a writer or a copywriter who is kind of in their realm and focuses on their realm and makes it obvious, then that's good enough. You know what I'm saying? Because
okay.
It's so rare, generally speaking. So I think you're fine. Are they going to really drill down? And, you know, more than likely they will not. The experience you have in architectural and engineering will probably be good enough.
Okay. And like the low-hanging fruit would be engineering firms. Like I had somebody from an engineering firm just ask me, she wants me to write some website content. So that's kind of like
right.
The low-hanging fruit. I'm a member of the Society for Marketing Professional Services and know those people, and they're architecture, engineering, and construction. So they're kind of my low-hanging fruit. But okay, so that I don't really have to worry about that I haven't really specifically written for construction.
Nah.
And then what you were just saying, all my – go ahead.
Well, here's the thing, and it's going to happen. I mean, because you, like you said, an example like that, you'll end up writing for someone about something construction related, and then suddenly you have that problem taken care of. So, and it won't take you long
okay.
for that to happen.
Okay. All right. And as far as samples on the website, I mean, everything that I've done to date has been for the one company. I mean, I've done diverse things, but it will all be one company until I start getting other things. And then I have something that's a real outlier is right now I'm editing a World War II memoir, but that's way off the – that's not in the realm. But it's interesting.
yeah, that one might be a little tough to showcase too, right, because of the format.
Yeah.
I should – let me – you guys should see this because I know I say this and you say, okay, well, I don't see how that could work. But let me point you to – I did an episode of my podcast where I actually showcased my first set of samples and I'll have to look to see what episode number it was, because I wanted everyone to see, look, this is what I started with. It's, I mean, it's embarrassing. Here I am. I'm trying to go after software companies, and one of my samples is for Nightingale Conant on an audio tape series from Earl Nightingale. Another one is a letter for a sales letter for a training company, a sales letter for a map advertising company, and then a marketing piece for a self-published author on quilting. Okay, I just used what I had, and
okay.
Eventually somebody just hired me. You know, the need was urgent enough. I came recommended, and I'll tell you exactly how it happened. It was a friend of mine. The training company. I say it's a company. It was actually just her. She had an official name, but she was training people on the software system. And she recommended me to an ex-boss of hers who's a close friend. And they happened to have an office in Atlanta. He was in here that week. I had an appointment with him, and he just gave me a shot. He said, well, let me tell you what we need. And he looked at my samples. He didn't care. I came recommended by Susan. And guess what? That's all I needed to now jump into the world of software marketing writing, you know, because now I had like a really good sample that wasn't from my employer. So even with offbeat samples, you can still get these opportunities. It might take you a little longer, but don't freak out about it. You know, it sounds like you're much further ahead than I was.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I have samples from the company that I worked for, but they're all going to be one. You know, there are different kinds of things, you know, like magazine articles and this and that, but it's all for one company, but that's what I have. So.
Okay. Well, you know what? Maybe I say it earlier that don't use the same, you know, three samples from the same company, but if that's all you got, you know, just go with that.
Okay.
Just go with that.
All right. Well, that's good.
Thank
you, then.
Several, make, you know, if you can diversify them so they're not on the same type of writing assignment, then even better.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I could do planning and engineering, you know, so they could be different disciplines.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so I can show diversity that way.
I like it.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Leslie. Welcome to the group. All right, so this is a number out of Maryland, 410 area code. It says Michael. You're on.
Hi, Ed. This is actually Jennifer.
Ah, see, that's why I say it says Michael.
Phone bills.
You're Jennifer
name.
During a day, Michael by night.
Yeah.
How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Doing well. It's good to talk to you. Welcome.
Thank you. So I actually have the same question as a lot of other people have had that you've already answered. So I'm gonna ask it a little differently. If you have, you know, multiple niches that you have experience in and you don't really have one that's kind of where you have a lot of contacts, or at least not a lot that you've spoken to recently, then how do you choose?
Okay. So have you narrowed it down to maybe three or four?
I've got nonprofit. Yeah, nonprofit, insurance, and consumer personal finance.
Personal finance. All right. So you have, in terms of experience, let's talk about recency first. So which one is the most recent, and then let's look at which one is the longest experience.
Well, since my daughter was born, I've done a little bit of insurance, kind of, you know, on a freelance basis, but mostly working for crappy clients since then. Before she was born, I worked for Citi. So I spent almost 6 years there working for their consumer finance subsidiary.
Uh-huh. And what did you do there?
Well, here's the problem. So I worked in the marketing department, but most of what I did was internal. I ghostwrote a lot of stuff, almost everything, for our CEO. So
mm-hmm.
You know, speeches and scripts and presentations, that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
which was mostly delivered to an internal audience. So, I mean, it sounds really impressive, but I can't show anybody anything.
Yeah. Can you talk about it?
I can talk about it, yeah.
Okay. That's really impressive. Okay. What would be the next one?
Before that, 2 years of insurance before that, and the nonprofit clients that I have been targeting, which I've actually had the most success with on a freelance basis, has only been on a freelance basis.
Okay. It's just been one client?
No, a couple.
Okay. And what have you done for them?
I've written stories for annual reports, magazines. I'm working on a marketing piece right now, like a sales sheet.
Uh-huh. Okay. Would you, and how do you like that work, and are you okay with the compensation?
I like it. The compensation so far has been good.
Okay.
But I know that.
So what's the hesitation with that one, would you say?
Well, I'm just not, I'm the group, it's kind of like a specific group of nonprofits, so I'm not sure if it's, if I could only write for that and make a living.
And what, would you mind sharing that?
Help people with disabilities find jobs.
Okay. It's interesting. I just had somebody contact me through somebody else who are looking for a volunteer. Same thing. They work with vets to help them find jobs, but it's a volunteer gig.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually looking into it right now. When I get the info, I may post it in the forum for those of you, not necessarily you, Jennifer, but if anyone is looking, we're going to talk about pro bono work and when that makes sense. But it's gone well, the compensation's, but it's only been in that sector of nonprofit.
In that sector, and it's only, it's a handful. I've started seriously prospecting, I want to say, in January, and that's the only work I've done. It's been a handful of projects. I've gotten no response on, the insurance or the consumer finance side, which seems odd to me.
And with how did you land the nonprofit clients? Is it through contacts, or was it the cold?
Well, originally, when I first started doing it, my first project was about 6.5 years ago. I had a friend who worked for one of the organizations, and that's how I got my first samples. But since then, I've just contacted them cold.
Okay. So, and you landed these two clients cold?
Uh-huh. But yes.
Oh, cool. Okay. And then consumer personal finance, how far does that go back?
I worked there, I left in 2010, and I was there for almost 6 years.
Okay. And how would you rate each one of them in terms of, the strength of your network?
Well, at this point, I'd say they're probably, about the same. That's the problem. I don't really have... my personal network, I pretty much reach out to almost everybody. I have a couple people that I haven't been in contact, that I haven't contacted yet, but mostly that's tapped out. And, the contacts that I had before my kids were born, I haven't really kept in touch with them.
Okay. So they're about equal in that regard. So you've exhausted your network as well. So you're probably going to have to start knocking on cold.
Yes.
Cold doors. All right. Well, based on that, then you really kind of look at the one dimension to really focus on is kind of like the financial capability or the strength
mm-hmm.
of demand.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not an exact science. I think it was Jessica who had asked, where can I do research on this? And
mm-hmm.
unfortunately, there isn't a way. But, kind of the litmus factor that I look for, and I talked about this in session one, is is there a demand? Are the products and services they selling, whatever they're selling, is it new, expensive, or complex? And I look for two out of those three. So nonprofits, that's kind of a different animal
mm-hmm.
Because that's not – the urgency there is really the right bringing in the funds.
Right.
So it's not a product or a service. That's separate. Insurance and consumer personal finance, yes, relatively complex. It depends, but it's complex enough and expensive enough in many cases that you need to write about it.
Right.
You require a lot of written materials. So the ones that look a little better are insurance and consumer personal finance.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you struck out there, you know, it seems like where you already have some momentum is with nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of immediate payoff and continue that momentum you have, my tendency would be to tell you, hey, just keep going down that rabbit hole, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep going down that path, and as long as you're happy with what you're getting, because you already have a start there.
Okay.
Now, if there's something that would keep you from doing that, then that's fine. The next one I would go to would be insurance, because the background you have there is impressive, and even though you can't show your samples, you can talk about what you did. And, you know, this is a short-term problem. What you would need is to land one or two clients who are willing to work with you, and then now you can leverage more of that more recent experience than your Citibank experience. See what
okay.
I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
you want to leverage what you did at Citi
right.
to kind of get a couple of anchor clients.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's you're now leveraging those anchor clients to get your next set. Still with the city
okay.
stuff, but so I don't know. I'm not giving you a straight answer, but I'm kind of hopefully narrowing it down for you and giving you some rationale.
Mm-hmm.
The nonprofit, you could go down that route because you already have the momentum, or you could just take a stand and say, I'm just going to go with this insurance thing. Here's another way to look at it. You could drive that stake in the ground for the insurance piece, but because you already have momentum with a nonprofit, you can keep leveraging your contacts and your reputation there to continue
okay.
getting work in order to fund your venture into insurance. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. So create the messaging that attracts the finance clients, but keep pitching the nonprofit ones.
You got it.
Okay.
You got it. Because the nonprofit ones aren't necessarily going to be, oh, well, I got to see your website. You know, you're coming referred, you've been introduced, and so forth. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I have plenty of samples to show in that space, so that's not an issue.
Perfect.
Okay. That's
perfect.
Awesome.
So that's another way of looking at it. That kind of I like that approach, and I actually did this myself when I was transitioning into more coaching. I had to just change my website. Everyone was looking at my copywriter site. So I said, well, wait a minute. Somebody finally told me, he said, if your software copywriting clients, they're coming to you already. They're referred.
Mm-hmm.
Like you already have momentum in that business, right? I said, yeah. Then make the switch. You know, create a website for your coaching and training services, because those people are going to need to see your credentials and your track record there. But the other guys, they're coming to you referred. They want to work with you already.
Okay.
So that's what I did. And I was scared to do it, but it worked out perfect. There's no problem.
Okay. That sounds good.
Okay.
All right. Thank
you. Hey, Ed. That's good. You already got a couple clients. I mean, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jennifer.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Good to talk to you. All right, I got a number in Charlotte, North Carolina, 704 area code. Looks like Charlotte, the Charlotte area. You're on.
Hey, Ed, this is Lisa Laney. How are you?
Hey, how are you, Lisa? Good to talk to you.
I'm doing well. Yeah, it's good to be here. I'm excited about this. So my background is varied, but with the most recent, I've spent the past 7 years working in projects. I'm a business analyst, so I write business requirements documents for, you know, system upgrades and things of that nature, a lot to do with project management and how that's run. So I was trying to get an idea of what you thought about that as a niche. I did some research in the positioning, and I saw that there were tons of companies that market project management software, but I'm not sure if that's going to be expensive enough or give me the, you know, if they, if they're going to pay enough for that area. So I don't know. I'm just, am I too narrow if I go to project management software, or should I just be a little more general in the technology space?
Yeah, it's a great question. So you mentioned the first thing you told me was projects. So it sounds like you're a business analyst, but does your world revolve around project management or a big part of it?
A big part of it does, yeah. I'm the lead business analyst, so not only do I write requirements, but I do project manage a lot of the smaller initiatives.
Uh-huh. Are you a certified project manager as well?
No. Just
no,
on the job training.
That's the best kind. All right, so first of all, project management software. Think of it this way. When it comes to technology and software, especially software, I mean, like, you don't even need to check any further. That's always a good bet because software is always changing and evolving. And because it's always changing and evolving, guess what? You need marketing materials to explain this new approach or this new version. Or even if it's the same, now you got competitors who are evolving, so you need to counteract that with marketing materials. So that one's always a safe bet. You could go that route if you wanted to. My suggestion would be to maybe start a little broader in your thinking. So anything, products or services in the project management arena. So in other words, anything related, because I'm sure it's not just software. There's other things out there when you're managing projects and doing your day-to-day stuff. And you could broaden it a little bit, but it's so that way you can capture some other opportunities without getting out of that project management cloud, if you will. You're still there.
Okay.
What do you think of that?
That makes sense. And in my prior life, I shift around a little. I get bored after a while. I was in financial services for about 10 years as a financial advisor and pharmaceutical sales before that. But the most recent where I think I would have the most contacts would be obviously in the project management world.
Okay. And how long has that been? How long have you been in this world right now?
7 years.
Okay. Yeah, so it's solid. I think you should start there.
Okay.
I think you should start there. I wouldn't if you're going to broaden, don't broaden to technology or software in general. I would keep it because your core thing, like think about this, right? Really what we're getting at is what do you know well and that they can't be taught overnight, right? Software, you could read a manual, and I'm oversimplifying here.
Right.
Project management, you can't read a manual. What 7 years of project management has taught you, like nobody can teach somebody else overnight. So that's really what you bring to the table. Of course, they expect you to write well. But the fact that you get it, that you understand it from an insider's perspective, that's the most valuable thing you offer. So I would leverage that instead of saying software because that's not the most valuable. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And you're right. I understand the pain points of being on the inside and what they're trying to solve for.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, keep it centered around project management. And software could be a big part of it, but then other complex products and services for project managers or project management industry.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Exciting. I love the diversity. We have a lot of you guys here with financial services backgrounds, which is really cool. I could tell that in the forum when the introductions. But I love that even some of you guys with that kind of background are looking at other possibilities as well. So good stuff. All right. I think next here is Michael out of New York. Michael. Good to talk to you again. It's been a while.
Yes, it has. How are you?
Doing well. one away.
Yeah, I don't have a question. I'm not in a position where I can have questions yet because I've been spending the last week and a half cleaning out our basement because we're getting it refinished starting yesterday.
Okay.
I feel like I've lost 20 IQ points doing all that work. But
that's always fun.
I actually have a yeah, hopefully I have enough to spare, though. I have actually more of a comment for the gentleman, the other gentleman from New York, Bill, I think was his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounded to me like Bill might benefit from changing the way he thinks about himself in general, not so much as a freelance writer, but more thinking about himself as a business development consultant. Because it sounds to me like he's just as involved in the kind of shaping, you know, working with executives and managers and how to think about the business and the direction the business is going and maybe even helping to support them in making those decisions and that sort of thing, as opposed to just, quote-unquote, just, you know, putting a proposal together or a piece of writing. So he might want to consider thinking of himself in a more expanded role or sphere of operation than quote-unquote, just writing. I'm not saying writing is easy and simple and it's just a small thing, but it sounds to me like he's going beyond that in a way that other copywriters don't. I mean, obviously, if you're a marketing copywriter, well, Steve Slonwaite said you want to be perceived as not just a writer, but as a strategist who writes.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds to me like he's doing that, but in a way that transcends or moves beyond marketing, and sounds like it encompasses operations and, you know, who knows what else. So it's just something you might want to think about.
Yeah, man. And thanks for that feedback, Michael. That's that is a great point. I could sense that was there, but he really wasn't highlighting it. I think he was dealing with a different dilemma too, in that, you know, which one should I focus on? But I totally agree. I think in anything you do, and this goes to my earlier point to Lisa, is you need to think about what you really bring to the table, because the moment you position yourself as a writer or a copywriter, or, you know, even as somebody who writes business plans, that's the feature, right? That is the generic commoditized category. You need to go beyond that, because otherwise everyone's going to put you down like in a spreadsheet. You're now column fodder, if you will, to compare you with other people. But the moment you can say, you know, this is all I do, or here's what I bring to the table, here's what makes me different, here's how I come about this, That's really what's going to change your business. I mean, you'll never have trouble growing your business if you do that. So that's a great point. I'm not sure if Bill's still on the line, but what I'll do is I'll make sure that he comes back to this point in the replay to listen to that. So thank you for offering that advice, Mike.
My pleasure, and I like that expression, column fodder.
You just don't want to be column fodder. But
don't,
yeah.
Don't be column fodder.
Don't be column fodder, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's
thank
good
you for
sound,
that.
Right. All right, thank you.
Yeah, and great stuff, guys. You know, that Michael's comment just brings up something I didn't mention earlier. And I know we're all, you know, still kind of getting to know each other. We're going to be doing this for 4 months, but at any point, if you want to chime in with an idea or a suggestion for somebody else, please do so. You know, raise your hand, let me know. But listen, I think many of you guys know me. I think my ego is kind of in check. I want you guys to get great value from these calls, and I don't have all the answers. So if you see something I missed, or if you have another idea for somebody, or you happen to have experience or background in a certain area or topic or industry that might be helpful to somebody else who's asked a question or made a comment, feel free to raise your hand. I'd love to bring you in, and that just adds more value to the conversation. So always open to that. All right. I got a caller here from Nashville, Tennessee, 615 area code. You're on.
Yeah, so this is John Parker. That would be me.
Hey, how are you? What's your name?
John Parker.
Oh, hey, John. Good to have you here.
Thanks. And so I feel like the answer to the question here is going to be focus, just because, you know, my issue is, you know, I think I'm very much a generalist. maybe even in some degrees a fixer, not in the Mike from Breaking Bad kind of fixer way, but you know, more from a business standpoint. You know, I've stood out, and even when I've asked people, you know, there's the exercise of asking people what it is that is unique. The answer comes back, you know, you demonstrated the ability, willingness and ability to do things that there was no one else to do, you know, that just had not been done before. And so I'm struggling with, you know, particularly on the positioning exercise, this for whom, you know, I think I've been fairly, and maybe it's I've been able to be somewhat reactive over my career, or, you know, to be in the right place at the right time and to be able to do what needs to be done. But I'm just struggling with, you know, mostly with the for whom question.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about your background. What have you done over the past, you know, decade or so?
Yeah, so I was with a large public accounting firm as a financial auditor for a while, and then over the past almost 10 years in various finance positions, finance and accounting positions for a publicly traded manufacturing company. But throughout all of those, I've also demonstrated the ability to, you know, be somewhat unique among accountants, in that, you know, I could write, and I have a good ear for the audience. And so, you know, even had a stint over the past, you know, within the past 7 years as a communication and investor relations person for, you know, for this public company. And I got that job because they needed somebody that could, you know, that was grounded in the company's business, but that could communicate with a number of audiences, from institutional investors to regulators to board members to employees.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of, you know, I feel like I'm this odd bird here with this. I'm quantitative, but, you know, I also like words.
I think you really have something there, that maybe it's not that you're not seeing it, but maybe you're either undervaluing it or maybe you don't see it as something to use or leverage, which is this concept of it's an unexpected message. You're the accountant who can actually write, and not just write, but actually communicate persuasively with a variety of audiences.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen this done very successfully with same thing with engineers and with technical people. And I've had coaching clients on both sides, and they've used that message very, very effectively. So you don't want to use those words necessarily like that, but you're the accountant in the financial professional who is very analytical but can actually communicate persuasively and has that sensitivity, right? You can really connect with a variety of different audiences. And that is a rare thing, and you know that. So how about working with something like that? Have you considered that angle?
That is where I'm trying to go, but I'm having a hard time articulating that. And again, it's not something – I think once people either get to know me or, you know, I'm on the team, it's a skill set that pretty quickly gets identified.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're picking – a lineup of picking from a lineup of people, it's really not something that people know how to process. I mean, I can't tell you how many recruiters that I've had that have looked at my resume and said, I don't know what to do with this.
Well, yeah, but that's because
so
it was a different
hard time
audience.
Marketing that. Right.
Yeah, that was a different audience. That was recruiters. But now you're talking to marketing directors and marketing managers who are going, let's say, after an audience of financial professionals and CPAs and auditors.
Okay.
Right? So that suddenly, it's all about the audience. It's all about the audience who's reading it. A recruiter is trying to place you in another position, trying to find a job for you. So this is a little different. Now you have a very specific audience. Here's what I would say. I've done this many times before, and it always works. I will actually leave my office. I'll go to either a coffee shop or a park or somewhere. I got to get out of my environment. And I'll take a notebook with me or my laptop. And I force myself to have this imaginary conversation with a layperson and explain to them why me. And I want and I force myself to use very simple words because it's a lay audience. Sometimes I pretend that I'm at a cocktail party and talking with a friend or somebody I just met, or maybe at a family gathering and they want to know what it is I do.
Mm-hmm.
And the format is typically something like, hey, you know this? Yeah. Well, I help these people do this. Or, you know this? Or what you may not realize is this particular thing is a problem, and here's why it's a problem. Well, that's where I come in. I help those two audiences actually communicate. And I use very short sentences, just one-line paragraphs, and it's crazy how when I do it that way, it just kind of comes out. I think there's this tension, natural tension of, you know, you want it to come out the way in its final form. And it's not going to do that. That just builds up way too much resistance and tension. So what you want, it's just if you and I are having a conversation, you know, what would that look like? And the way I've had that conversation with people, for instance, with what I do now, is I tell them, well, you know these marketing pieces that you see, like brochures and websites and so forth? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, believe it or not, that's not typically somebody in-house who writes those. It's typically a freelance writer. Well, these freelance writers are very good at what they do for the most part, but what they're not good at is growing their businesses. I show them how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. Keep it really simple, and then you can always add to that. You can always maybe expand it, refine it. But in your case, you know, it could, if you work with that angle, is, you know, the problem is that you have financial people they're too deep into what they're doing, trying to write stuff and persuade others who may not understand that. Or you have lay people trying to communicate with financial people, and they don't know how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the translator. I solve that problem. I have this gift. You know, I have this talent where I have the background to be able to understand it. And I have this ability to understand where things could go wrong. So I make sure to explain it in a simple and persuasive way that's going to connect with that audience. I don't know. I'm just making this stuff up, John. But you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I got somebody I've worked with in the past, Liz Farr, F-A-R-R. And she's done something similar. So she's a CPA. She's doing really, really well. And it's farrcommunications.com, by the way, F-A-R-R Communications. I'll just read from her site. She says, my name is Liz Farr, and I am that rare CPA who can write clearly and effectively and who understands marketing. So she did both. I help accountants and professional service providers demonstrate their value to clients and prospects by writing copy that communicates their unique strengths and offerings. Yeah, and then she expands on that, but
that's helpful.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that she used the word rare.
Right.
Because it's true.
Great.
Okay. That helpful? That makes sense?
That's helpful, yeah.
Okay. Super. Yeah, it's funny. You know, you guys get a bad rap, John. My accountant, I've been with him for like 12 years. He is the coolest guy ever. If I met him somewhere, you'd never know. You never know he's an accountant, but we know
right.
There's a stereotype, right?
Right.
So. All right. Good stuff. Glad we got a chance to talk through that. All right, guys, so we got an open floor right now, star two, if you've been wanting to ask a question, you've been too shy, or maybe thought of something else, it's an open floor right now. And while I'm waiting, keep in mind that, you know, the forum is another great way to ask questions as you think of them throughout the week. So I'm there typically, at least every other business day. Many times I'm there every day, every business day. But just know that I'm constantly monitoring it. I will answer questions there. I'm here to help you. Just make sure to post them in the weekly Q&A thread. And that will always be the top thread on the page. We start a new one every week just to kind of keep it clean. And the way to ask a question is just post a comment to that thread, and I will reply to you. All right, New Jersey, you are on. And sorry, I don't have a name, and I know you've asked a question before, but I forget who this was. Hello. I don't know if this was Leslie. Somebody with a New Jersey 201 area code. All right, I'll put you on mute if you come back. Sounds like you had me on mute. Just hit start two again, and I'll bring you back on. All right, Tracy in South Carolina, South Carolina number, you're on.
That's me. Thank you. I didn't want to be greedy, but I have more questions.
Okay. Go for it.
So, in listening to everyone else, I've started to question myself again. I've gone through the majority of the exercise and brought myself back to a potential niche of scientific products.
Okay.
Because I have a science degree and I've worked in science jobs. But in the past 10 years, I have not. I stopped working to stay home with my kids, and I have done nothing but customer service and cooking since then. Am I too far removed? I haven't really kept in touch with anyone, although I think I could go back. But they were also, it was a biotech company that I worked at. So it's not like I was in a company that did any manufacturing or sales of, you know, that type of product. I mean, they sold their products.
Mm-hmm.
But am I too far gone?
Well, no, not necessarily. So you said there are scientific jobs or topics. What was your role? Are you a scientist?
I like to call myself a scientist, but I was a greenhouse technician,
mm-hmm.
and then I worked in a media lab where basically it was more like chemistry.
Okay.
I made media, mixed chemicals, and that sort of thing. And my degree is in ecology, which I was initially. I've been going back and forth between wanting to target environmental companies, green businesses, but I don't really have experience in that market. I just, I just like trees.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's enough to go on.
Yeah, well, it's typically not, right? Because if we go back to the exercise, that falls into this example of, all right, that's a passion. But when you look at the
right.
next two dimensions, you fall short. So no contacts,
right.
actually just the first, the first one, the second one, financial capability. Yes, many of them do. But really that next one, the contacts, and then tying it to even the first dimension of what is your, the nature of the experience. When there's little there, now you're 2 out of 4
right.
that are missing.
Right.
So that's tough. How about if you kind of broadened it a little bit, but you brought in kind of your expertise and your background. So what if you kept it to companies that are selling complex science or scientific products, right? In other words, you're trying to say, look, if you're selling something that's complicated and scientific in nature, it really helps to work with someone with that kind of background, with a scientific background,
uh-huh.
right? Because you don't, I don't need the hand-holding. I'll be able to grasp concepts, complex ideas and concepts and terms easily. So it's not a particular industry. It's really more about the nature mm-hmm. of the products and services or solutions that you'd be writing about.
Okay. Okay, so a little, so it's basically a little more general.
Yes. Yep. And this goes to something that I've said before is, you know, your target market doesn't need to be an industry. You know, it could be a different attribute that you highlight, such as this example, the nature of what you write about, which would be complex scientific products and services.
Right, right. Fancy
I had someone who's a biology professor, and he had the same dilemma. It's like, man, if you've been a biology professor for 12 years, I think it was, hey, you write, the way we talked about it was, I help companies write marketing materials who need someone with this kind of background. You know, where it would
okay.
help to have someone
right.
with this background.
Right, okay. Okay.
And you don't have to, you know, explain or make yeah. excuses for it's
yeah.
been 10 years. I mean, I'm assuming when you were in it for more than just a couple of years, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I did a lot of different things, you know. At the university, I worked in research labs, so I've used a lot of different types of equipment. It's
mm-hmm.
just been a long time.
Yeah, and that's fine. Don't worry too much about, oh, things have changed so much. I mean, hopefully you've kept up with some of it with reading, but even if you haven't, you know, you get it. You would grasp
yeah.
things a lot quicker than I would, for instance.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And yeah, I mean, I do love reading about it, but I, as far as keeping up with it, you know, not so much about the types of equipment I haven't really kept up with.
Okay. Yeah.
But,
again,
it's,
but that's
it's
okay.
Like,
that's
it's like
okay.
riding a bike, right?
Yeah, because those are things that once you're in it, I mean, that will come naturally, right?
Yeah.
And once you're in it, you're going to be more immersed in some of the newer things that are coming to the market, and then that won't be a problem.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
I don't remember what an isotope is, for instance. You know, you
right.
you know that.
Right.
So that's what you want, like the fact that you can understand a lot of these cons, you have that background, that training, that education. That's really what matters. Forget about the fact that it's been 10 years. Forget about the fact that, you know, you may not be familiar with the new equipment currently in place. It's really about, again, we talked earlier about what do you bring to the table.
Yeah.
That background is invaluable. And you're not looking to prove yourself to everyone. You just need one or two clients to give you a shot based on what they see today, maybe through a connection, maybe because a connection, two different factors. Maybe you came referred and what they need is kind of immediate and fine. And if the price is right, then let's go for it. Let's give you a shot. Now suddenly you're in.
Okay. Okay. Okay, cool.
Okay.
That's what it is then. That's what it is.
Yeah, you just got to press
that's
forward.
That's
yeah.
what it's going to be. Yeah, okay, okay.
Yeah, so, you know, jump off the cliff. You'll grow wings on the way down.
I'm counting on it.
You will, Tracy. All right, guys. So, again, star two, if you have a question, that will raise your hand. Good stuff today. Great questions. All right. This is the New Jersey number, 732 area code. You're on.
Ed?
Yeah.
Hi, Ed. It's Matt. Matt Tron.
Hey. How are you, Matt?
How you doing? I'm good.
Doing well.
I've been listening to the call, and what I'm getting from this is that you're telling people what they've done maybe in the last 10 years is like a good starting point to go after mm-hmm. for clients, whatever industry they may have been in. Is that what I'm getting from that?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of the self-inventory that you're doing. That's a great place to start. There's also passion, skills, interests, et cetera, but yes.
All right, because I have I have financial services background. I'm also a cancer survivor, so I have a lot of different things that I – and the past employer that I worked for, I wrote all of their marketing material, and the manager that I was working under was always annoyed with me because my pieces always beat his stuff that he wanted to do. And I had a little postcard that they wanted to try mailing postcards, and my postcard pulled a 37 response rate, and his did like a 1.3 response rate, and he was like just furious. So he refused to use a lot of my material after that, and it was just crazy, you know. Even my sales letters did better than his, but I've been out of that industry about a year. I was forced out. I had to go on disability and stuff, which is a whole other story. But I have a whole like diverse sales background, and I've been gearing towards like video and real estate and helping sales agents in real estate put together the videos and marketing pieces for their houses. The problem with that I found is that a lot of the agents, unless they're multi-million dollar homes, don't want to spend a lot of money for marketing.
Yeah.
So you don't get, yeah. The other aspect is that I have a production company that I've been doing music videos for their website and their upcoming shows and so forth. But the problem that I found with that also is a lot of the upcoming bands don't have huge budgets and they can't afford to pay well. But it's a passion and I love doing it, so I keep doing it because it's something that I enjoy. But I need to find, you know, the market, the niche that's going to make me the money to sustain, you know, normal income. Now listening to the call, I'm thinking I should probably go back and target that industrial. It was a forklift company, and I sold their service contracts and did their sales, the training. I taught the people how to drive the forklift and so forth after they went in and sold it. So I'm thinking I should probably focus towards that because that's what I did for 7 years, within most recent. And I can just continue along doing my little music videos and real estate videos, and hopefully one day I can find a niche in there that'll pay well.
Yeah. So on the surface, that sounds like the right approach because that's where you have a knowledge, experience, a track record. In fact, you even have a very tangible track record with marketing there, even though that wasn't your official function, it sounds like. But
no, it wasn't.
And the other stuff, you're right, it's more speculative, and that's going to be something, you know, like we talked about a few other folks, that they had a different, something else they wanted to pursue, but they can tell that it's going to be a hard going. So that could be more of a side hustle that you try to, you know, work as you can, knowing that this is not going to necessarily pay the bills.
Right. Because I do have I have WordPress certification. I can create the web content. I know I can look under the hood. I know how, you know, how the website operates, although that's not really what you know, building the website and all that. I know how to do it. It's not what I want to do, but I felt if I was going to create the content, I should know, you know, if you create a link or if you create a an opt-in piece and it's not working, I figured you should know how to go in and fix it if somebody has a problem with it. So, I, you know, I went and learned how to do all of that. I just figured it didn't hurt, you know.
Okay. Yeah, so would you be okay going after, you know, the industrial market, for instance?
I don't think it would be a problem. I just have to go back and check. I have to check some paperwork because I don't know if I can legally because of the way I left with the other company. So I just have to make sure that I don't get myself into trouble. So I have to go back and just check some paperwork. But I should be okay. As long as I'm not mentioning that company or anything to do with them, you know, bad-mouthing and things like that. So those are the only things that I have to check, but I should be all right going after that market, which I still do have contact because a couple of the people that I worked with at that company left and went to different companies, two different companies. So that may, now that I'm thinking, yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, it may be a quick in to make some money and then just keep maybe drilling down in that industry or into a different industry.
Yeah, and, you know, you never know what could happen. Again, serendipitously is, you know, you work a couple of gigs there and then one of your clients refers you to a good friend who's in a different industry. And
right.
Because of the referral.
Right. That
you,
that's what I'm hoping. Yeah, because I mean, I still have contact in financial services, and I still hold my real estate license and stuff. But I find that financial services. I know you had a young lady on before earlier in the call. I was talking about doing the retirement planning, 401ks, and defined benefits and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't call in. I was in the middle of doing something, but. One of the things that I found, because I still have a close friend of mine that's in financial services, and I've approached him several times to write pieces for him because he and I both did the same thing, benefits for small groups, and their defined benefits, their retirement programs, their health benefits. And one of the problems that she may run into, which is why that gentleman told her that you can't make money, if it's an individual person, and they have they represent a company, like a home office, let's say like a State Farm or a MetLife or something like that. Those companies have their own in-house people, and it has to go through their legal team before they'll release anything. So that may be why he was telling her she'll have a hard time generating income. Now, if she's working with an independent and she's just going to promote that independent person, that's a whole different story. She may be able to make money there, but if she's going to write pieces that go towards like a whole life policy or a specific benefit program, that may be why he says she wouldn't be able to make money, because that would have to go past the whole legal team in the home office of the company they're representing. So that may be why he said that.
Gotcha. Yeah.
All right. I ran into that problem with this. You know, with this gentleman that I know from financial services. I also ran into it for the companies that I worked for, you know, trying to create marketing pieces, because a lot of the stuff, if you read through it, it's just dry and boring, and it's that way because the attorneys take all the good stuff out, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Nope,
yeah.
You can't say that. Nope, you can't say that. Nope, you're insinuating that they're going to get a better return than they actually may not get, and it really, you know, they cut all the good stuff out, and they leave you with nothing. You know, you're left with the bone, which, you know, they always tell you sell the sizzle, not the steak, you know, and there's no sizzle left if you cut all the meat off of it. So that's why she may run into a problem with that. Again, if you're just marketing an individual and you're saying, you know, John Jones has XYZ experience and he can do this for you, he can do that for you. Again, you got to be careful with what you say and what you claim. But she may be able to do that and make money. But in terms of writing the actual stuff for a specific piece of material, that's where she may hit the brick wall.
And what she had there is she already had the insight because she's actually been writing that for the past 15 years. So it seemed like she really understood the ins and outs already.
Right.
She just wanted to see, hey, can I do this for other companies as well?
Right. So that's the only – I mean, if she was –